My name is Jill Hicks. I'm the interim president of the Sussex Preservation Coalition, and I live in Chapel Green, Lewis. First thing I'd like to do is submit petition in opposition to North Star. It has 827 signatures.
Is that, just so we know, is that, do we have some of those signatures? In other words, I don't want to duplicate. Yeah, or maybe you don't know. I just didn't know if you knew.
This looks like a different petition.
That's a different petition.
Okay, all right.
That petition was on our website, and we also had a link on our website to it. So there's a lot of electronic signatures. And also, before I start my part of the presentation, just to piggyback on what Mr. Robertson said and some of the questions that were asked, when, and Pam, you can correct me if I'm wrong, when we talk about this letter that they send that says they approve this site, as Vince was saying, it's about, we approve this intersection being built this way, we approve the shoulders being built this way, we approve the amount of money that the developer is contributing to those improvements, but it's not a letter that says we approve the traffic impact over that entire corridor or that whole roadway. It's not saying we're okay that you're adding 17,000 cars. It's not addressing that. It's addressing the improvements needed to that area around the site. It's not as holistic as the entire impact. Okay, all right. All right, yeah. I'll back off of that then. Yeah. And the threshold has to do with TID. I just wanted to...
Ms. Hicks, the issue is you need director comments.
Yeah, that's
us.
All.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, not
I'm sorry.
Not to anyone else, frankly.
Yeah, no.
That's
okay,
not.
Well, I just...
Anyway,
the point is this. Is DLDOT... Okay, so land use decisions belong to the county. They belong to planning and zoning. DLDOT is only saying, if you're going to approve this application, these things need to be done, and this amount needs to be paid if you're in the TID. But as everything stands now, land use decisions don't belong to DLDOT. They belong to planning and zoning. And I just wanted to clear that up. Okay, so what am I here
I
for?
I think we're aware of that.
I know you are, but I just thought the public was a...
You were clarifying that for, but...
No, for the public, because it
sure
wasn't...
We get that. Okay.
It wasn't clear. There was some... Okay. Some deep breaths when they said there was an approval, and
yeah,
I just wanted to clear that up.
Yeah,
DLDOT neither approves nor disapproves. They simply say, if this is what you're going to do, this is what we have to do, and that's exactly what we need them to do for us. So
exactly.
So I get it.
Exactly.
Sure.
Okay, so I am going to walk through our observations and recommendations regarding the application. The remarkable... Oh, let me go to my slide, and that'll help us.
Yeah, because I know we got off track with the slides.
We got you all.
I just have to figure out how to get there.
I think it's the other mouse. How many mice
I'll
are
use
up
this,
there?
This, oh, who's is that me?
Label those things. Seconds,
2 seconds. Cancel that. Go page up, page down. That's what it is.
On the keyboard?
Yeah.
On the keyboard? Mm-mm.
Can you go down and
yeah.
I need to get to slide 35. Back it up.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay. Back up one more slide, please. There you go. I'm going to walk you through our observations and recommendations regarding the application, the remarkable safety risks posed by the plan, why the plan does not meet superior design standards, the impact of the surrounding communities, and the overkill of the C3 zoning request. Now, if I could just figure out how to advance this.
Can we get somebody to?
Yeah, I if you tell me when, I'll watch.
Okay, thank you very much.
There you go. It's just these.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Pam.
Thanks, Pam.
Okay, so as Joe said in the beginning and echoed by the planning and zoning staff, this plan, as described by its own application as a mixed-use community, should have been, therefore, submitted and reviewed as an RPC. This is from the staff review letter. Staff recommend that the applicant consider submittal of this project as a residential plan community, RPC, rather than a series of four separate applications, but related applications, in order to provide for a superior living environment and the application of design ingenuity in planning for a development of this scale and size. This would provide for design flexibility for the applicant and enable the commission a more holistic approach to their review. The applicant's response was, this applicant considered and appreciated staff's recommendation, but intends to leave the project as four separate applications. No reason given, no explanation, not even a counter reply. So the developer applies as a mixed use community, rides the coattails of the affordable housing units to expedite the so-called mixed use project, and then after it receives the expedited status, separates the project into four separate pieces, and worse yet, the affordable housing that got the project expedited in the first place will have no access to the amenities of the community and cannot be a part of the HOA. It is known as bait and switch, the ploy of offering something desirable to gain favor, then thwarting expectations. The Willows at North Star is a part of the community in name only. The Willows are segregated from the community geographically and by conditions of exclusion. So what is the plan if the state's workforce housing plan falls through? Does the entire project continue? Where does the connection begin and end? And what is the status of the funding? After initial postponement of the P&Z hearing in March, were deadlines missed? According to a letter between developer and Ingerman, dated December 4th, part of the funding is proposed to be accomplished through low-income housing tax credits from the Delaware State Housing Authority, and the applications are due in April 2024, which has come and gone. Having to wait a year or more to be able to seek the low-income housing tax credits from the Delaware State Housing Authority would be a considerable setback in the timing of opening the doors to these proposed apartments for low and moderate income households in need of affordable housing. Will the Willows at North Star be funded and built first as promised by the developer? And what is the funding status? SPC recommends two options regarding this dilemma. First option is to expedite the entire project as an RPC as requested by planning and zoning staff. This would provide a holistic approach to the mixed-use project as should be. Level the playing field for all developers.
Excuse me, before we get too far down the road, I want to ask you a question. The questions you were just asking, are they rhetorical, or do you actually want us to seek an answer for those questions?
I do want an answer.
Okay. Mr. Hudd, if your team would take note of the questions when they come up, and we'll give you an opportunity to respond.
Thank you. Okay. It would ensure adherence to code without making an exception that becomes an unwanted or regrettable precedent. The plan as is falls short of superior design standards expected by the county under its code and standards, and I will cover this. Finally, if submitted as an RPC, following the code for RPC, the Willows at North Star and the entire project would rightfully be expedited without exception or precedent. The second option would be to proceed with separate applications as filed, except expedite the MR application for the affordable housing. But the cluster subdivision and the C3 go back into the queue 14 to 17 months after the filing date of December 4th. Again, this would level the playing field for all developers. It would avoid a regrettable precedent. It would allow the Willows at North Star to be expedited without precedent. And the cluster subdivision and commercial projects could proceed regardless of securing affordable housing from the state program or any unforeseen circumstances. Now I would like to address the remarkable safety concerns with this plan. And I emphasize remarkable because for any cluster subdivision, how can its design be considered superior if it's unsafe for its residents, the surrounding communities, and/or the county at large? One main selling points and characteristics of a mixed-use community an RPC, or the upcoming MPZ is that it is pedestrian and bike friendly. It is supposed to promote community and belonging among its residents. Divided into five fragments by two major state thoroughfares, North Star is none of these. This cluster subdivision is riddled with hazards. Speed on Mulberry Knoll Road today is 50 miles per hour. It is unrealistic to believe that drivers will slow down or obey a lower speed limit through North Star on Mulberry Knoll Extension. Speed limit on Beaver Dam Road, which divides North Star, is 45 miles per hour. I've illustrated the flashpoints and how North Star residents will have to cross Beaver Dam Road and Mulberry Knoll Extension to reach the amenity centers or the commercial retail space. Not only is speed a factor, but what are the vehicle trip projections for the Mulberry Knoll Extension? That is another question that I'm asking that needs to be answered. There are no parking spaces shown for the amenity centers. So it is safe to assume that residents are expected to walk, ride bikes, scooters, motorized wheelchairs, etc., to reach and enjoy these amenity centers. Planning and zoning staff noted on page 10 of their review letter, please include location, dimensions, and purposes of any and all crosswalks and easements to be provided on the plan, specifically for the proposed 80 lots to be located on the south side of Beaver Dam Road. I'd also like to point out that the picture that they showed, where it showed the crosswalk, that was across one of their private roads. It was not across the Mulberry Knoll Extension. Let's see. There is no traffic light provided to safely cross Mulberry Knoll Extension to reach the amenity center directly across. Let's discuss further the separation of the low-income affordable housing center. To reach commercial retail areas, affordable housing residents must cross Mulberry Knoll Extension or Lewis Georgetown Highway if they want to get over to the Vineyards. Pedestrians will undoubtedly cut through the buffer where I've drawn the dotted lines. It is highly unlikely that they will trek to the light and then cut back to the retail center. By the way, the speed limit on Lewis Georgetown Highway is 50 miles per hour. You know what they say, there is a lot of truth in sarcasm. This cartoon appeared in last week's Cape Gazette, which should tell you something. The caption reads, "And now, friends, we have all the ingredients for my favorite, a precarious pedestrian pie." While this comic was in reference to Dewey's pedestrian dilemma, it applies here, except you have the option and responsibility to prevent putting the public at risk. Safety should be priority number one, and a design that is not safe is not superior. But I'll get to more about superior missteps in two slides. SPC wants to thank the developer and design engineer for removing the stub road from the preliminary plan that was to run through Lewis Crossing. The stub road would have become a shortcut through Lewis Crossing to avoid traffic backup at the light. Beaver Dam, if you look in the lower left-hand corner, now that they have a four-way stop, is backing all the way up to Coastal Club. So we know that when they put this light in, it is going to back up, and people would have cut through Lewis Crossing to get into North Star. Let's see. At Dairy Farm, okay, I already covered that. So we thank the developer and the engineers for listening to the residents of Lewis Crossing and removing the stub road. It's imperative that it doesn't come back when you go into the review process. Unfortunately, with all the building curring being added to Beaver Dam Road and the surrounding area, when traffic backs up on Beaver Dam Road, Mulberry Knoll Extension, or Lewis Georgetown Highway, drivers will cut through North Star. And ironically, it's the same path that they showed as far as traffic through that area. It will be used as a cut through. Those of us who live in the area especially when construction starts, know how to get around it. This is a case for synchronizing any development along these corridors with future roadway expansions. In our small community, when detours were added to accommodate the road closure on Will King Road for sewer work, drivers were speeding through our development. Our private roads are not constructed to handle that amount of traffic, passing in opposite directions at unsafe speeds when there's cars parked on those roads from time to time. This happened during the school year when children were exiting buses. Neighbors made and posted "please do not speed" signs. I personally flagged down a speeding FedEx driver because he notoriously came through when school children were walking home from the bus. He gave me the excuse that he has to speed to make his deliveries on time. Private roads within subdivisions were not built in size and construction to conduct this kind of traffic. For safety's sake, these subdivisions and communities need to be synchronized with DLDOT's expansion plans to prevent these hazardous conditions and situations in any way possible. This plan is not superior in design. According to the code, a cluster subdivision requires 30% open space, so North Star must provide 114 acres of open space. And as they said, they have 166 acres of open space, and that's good. Only, and 30% of the 30%, or 9% of the site, must be contiguous open space, or in their case, 34 acres. Only one area of this site is large enough. Open space A is 46.3 acres. You would think it's one of these highlighted spots would be what you would call contiguous open space that might qualify, but they are not. They are not large enough. The green highlight is open space A, what they are calling contiguous open space. Open space A is actually six small fragmented open spaces connected by a perimeter buffer. To borrow a phrase from a friend, this Swiss cheese is more contiguous than this. This space does not meet the intent of the contiguous open space requirement. To accept this makes a mockery of superior design. 115-25F3A3B states, required open space must be designed to be beneficial to the residents or users of the open space. It shall not be constituted of fragmented lands with little open space value. Accordingly, 30% of all required open space shall be located on one contiguous tract of land, except that such open space may be separated by water bodies with a maximum of one street. P&Z staff noted on page 11 of its review, superior design criteria number two, the open space as reflected within the subdivision design appears to be fragmented nature, and this criterion could be better addressed within this proposal. I would recommend that the parcel on the south side of Beaver Dam Road that also contains wetlands, that is cut off by both roadways, Beaver Dam and Mulberry Knoll Road, that juts into Lewis Crossing, should have been left for contiguous open space or put into conservation. But developers have learned how to cleverly bend the rules and call things that are not as if they were, so they can squeeze every inch out of the land. I realize this land will be developed one way or one day, and that the landowner has rights. But to be so cavalier about it and expect the county to not call it into question or support the comments and observations made by its own staff is unconscionable. I really hope you study this design and the comments made by planning and zoning staff and set this right. Amenity centers, as shown as open space, which is okay, but as I asked before, will there be parking and other impervious surfaces that do not qualify as open space in its calculation? Should cluster subdivision gross area be reduced by the Mulberry Knoll extension, its right-of-way and easements? This is another question to be asked. Was it included in the net development area? Did it count towards the density calculation? Perimeter buffers for several lots that are highlighted appear insufficient. BJ Lane buffer is 20 feet, which should be 30 feet to meet cluster subdivision code. Also, the 30-foot buffer totally owned by North Star LLC, is that wooded? This is the buffers between Lewis Crossing and Lewis Landing. When they show the wooded buffers, is that the woods that's already existing in Lewis Crossing, or is it a part of the parcel? That 30 feet is a totally wooded buffer within that parcel, this project.
To come up with that
60-foot wooded buffer that they spoke about.
I think, right. I know what you're saying, because the 60 feet is really 30 feet of Lewis Crossing. Yeah. There's
right.
Like 30. Yeah, 60 feet. It's
Thank
only
you.
30.
Add the
yeah.
two together. Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, security lighting. Okay, so adverse impact on surrounding communities. Security lighting for the MR parking area, which notice the parking area is on the outside of that section. The buildings are on the inside with the exception of the one, and the parking is around the perimeter on the outside. Security lighting for parking area will shine into Lewis Crossing. If this were an SCRP, a 50-foot to 100-foot forested buffer would be required for this very reason. A larger buffer will reduce light and noise pollution. In the spirit of the SCRP affordable housing requirements, which expedited this project, a larger buffer should be required, and you could make this a condition. In case anyone needs reminding, this is Lewis Crossing. It is already dealing with light and noise pollution from Redners. If the developer wants his project, which is located in an AR1 district where residents currently live, the Planning and Zoning Commission and the County Council have the authority to add this condition, widen the buffers. It is not unreasonable. In fact, it is unreasonable not to require it.
Ms. Hicks, real quick, before you go to that past that picture, because you all have shown that one before with Redners.
Yes.
For the life of me, I can't figure out the angle of that. Where is the picture taken from? Is it on the same side as Redners?
No, so I am.
What? Okay.
There you go. Yeah, so I am in Lewis Crossing.
Okay.
I am on the road looking
across. The way it was explained before, I was thinking it was in the vineyards looking down Route 9.
So that's the fence that runs along Route 9?
Yes.
Okay. Redners is on the other side
of
the road.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
So you can see the amount of light pollution that security lighting does, and that stockade fence doesn't help. If you drive and look into backyards, you'll see that some of these residents have taken to planting conifers to try to come up with their own remedy.
Now that's helpful, because I know you've used that picture
Thanks.
Before. Where in the world is that taken?
I know.
Okay, thank you.
And then I'm showing this so you can see how that parking goes right up by that perimeter buffer, and that will have security lighting. Without a larger buffer, forested buffer, the quality of life in Lewis Crossing will deteriorate, and home values will be negatively impacted. Planning and zoning staff noted page 12 of their review, number 6. Please note that the Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission may add conditions to the approval of any cluster development to protect adjacent properties and the natural environment. And by the way, I think I addressed this. Preliminary drawings show a forested buffer all the way around the perimeter of the entire project, except in the commercial area. Another question that I have that needs to be answered, does this mean the developer will plant a forested buffer where none currently exists? Make it a condition as it was shown. So how does North Star stack up against code 99-9C? The approval of a subdivision shall include consideration of the following. Number 3, I'm not going through all 17, just a couple that really stand out. Preservation of open space and scenic views. I think we proved no. Screening of objectionable features from neighboring properties and roadways, no. Provision for safe vehicular and pedestrian movement within the site and adjacent ways, no. Gotta turn the page. Effect on schools, public buildings, and community facilities. As we said earlier, we need to get answers for that. Effect on area roadways and public transportation, no. Now, the zoning for the C3. The request was made for C3 when what the developer described really could be satisfied by a C1. A reminder where the commercial area is to be. Nassau Commons and the Vineyards are B1 and C1. They don't need a C3.
But just real quick, do you realize that C1 and B1 are closed districts? You can't get those anymore in Sussex County.
I did not realize that.
Yeah, so, because the issue with C1 would be that this is what happened at Vineyards. You can do by right 12 units an acre with no limit on commercial. So it was closed several years ago so that you couldn't get, we were losing all our commercial zoning because people were putting 12 units an acre by right on it. So you can't do that B1 either. That's why there was an overhaul of the commercial areas to come up with the C2, C3, C4, and then the different B business zonings.
So what I would do, what I would recommend is the problem with the C3, thank you, by the way. What I would do with the C3 is, in understanding it, it's for large-scale auto-oriented retail and service business along major arterial roads. But the other uses listed are warehousing, storage, manufacturing, and assembly. So, and I'll skip the next slide because it's C1, which apparently doesn't pertain. I think what needs to happen is that there be some limitation on what can happen in that commercial area, that it stays with retail, that it doesn't get into manufacturing or heavy storage or heavy use of equipment, the dust, the clutter, and the dirt. That it resembles more of what's in the area. And that I know you have the right to do.
Actually, we don't. Once a change of zone is granted, it's granted based on what's allowed. We can't say, yeah, C3 except for this, this, and this. It's either yes or no.
Then it probably should.
A conditional use, on the other hand, is where we have the discretion. So it's two different things.
And but I would recommend.
I understand what you want.
Yeah, I would recommend no.
We hear you. Yeah. Okay.
Let's see. We know Beaver Dam, am I in the right? Yes. We know the Beaver Dam Road and Lewis Georgetown Highway will be expanded in the next decade or two. What will happen to buffers and commercial parking when these roads get expanded? Because you can see they're right up against that roadway, whether it's the buffers or the parking for the commercial area, which now I'm saying you should probably deny. Okay, so. Process, design, and safety recommendations. Number one, ask NorthStar to resubmit the application as a residential plan community, RPC, as requested by P&Z staff. This will provide a holistic approach to the mixed-use community and increase the likelihood of having a superior design.
Before you go on that, because I want to understand the logic behind that, because I understand part of it, because then we know under what you had said, that the Willows part of it, the affordable housing, would be integrated into the whole thing and
right.
Not standalone.
Right.
The issue is, though, it's all zoned AR right now, so they would still need a conditional use to get the Willows separate and apart from the RPC. And I guess my other thought is the RPC doesn't, and I know that you take issue with whether they satisfy the cluster design requirements of the cluster subdivision, but the RPC doesn't have any of that. I mean, all that's gutted out of it, so there's actually like less guardrails in place under an RPC than there are under the cluster design requirements. So what's the benefit of going the RPC route?
If
just so we can understand it a little bit.
Yeah, the reason I believe they took this route is that doing it as a cluster subdivision and then you play those rules highly increases the amount of density that you can put into that land. And then also that impacts everything else that we've talked about, whether it's schools, the infrastructure. I'll just call it the infrastructure.
Yeah. I guess I hear you on that. The thing is that the RPC allows you to keep the 2 unit per acre density and play around with the lot sizes and everything without any open space requirements or really any. There's the stuff about design ingenuity, but it doesn't say what that is, you know? And I almost just question whether that would put the commission in a worse spot of trying to be discretionary on what design ingenuity is versus having strict guidelines in a cluster subdivision.
This is the planning and zoning staff.
Oh, I know, yeah.
Is recommending this as well. Yeah. I also think that there's a requirement, and I'm not an expert, I don't pretend to be, but I also know that there's a requirement when it comes to taking out the roadways and some other things that also affect the density.
Yeah.
And so if I ran the numbers accurately, it probably would.
Yeah. Well, we're going to find out too. That is a good question you brought up about what was used for the density calculations mm-hmm. for this. So. Anyway, no, it was a question. I hope you think it was a fair one. I just wanted to understand
the
rationale. Because I know that staff mentioned that. And I know that you all are really engaged in land use, and maybe there was something that you all had thought of that we hadn't in terms of RPC. So.
And the other thing, well, you know, superior design has been, and I'll stop there.
Well, you don't have to say anything more, but I will say this, and I think you can appreciate this, that at least there's a definition of superior design. You can argue whether it's good or bad or indifferent. There's standards in Section 115.25 for a cluster subdivision. There's not anything in the RPC section of the code. That's why I go back to, you know, at least we've got some sort of guardrails in place on this, if it gets acted on favorably at all. But, you know, I mean, there's just, it's the Wild West when you come to an RPC compared to a cluster subdivision.
If you run the numbers, it has quite a big impact on density.
No, that's fair. That's why I asked. So.
And I would.
Yeah, okay.
Alternatively, if you don't do it as an all RPC.
Well, that's why I asked, because I know you had the other option.
Expedite the MR application for the Willows at North Star, but place the cluster subdivision and the C3 application into the regular queue. The remaining applications will be considered 14 to 17 months after the filing date of December 4th. In this way, the county avoids establishing a precedent where affordable housing that is not truly incorporated into the community can be used as a tactic to receive expedited consideration. And I want to say, I don't know that we figured out affordable housing yet. I agree it's an issue. I agree we need to get it expedited. We need to take care of it. I'm not sure that we have all the answers yet. But we do agree, and that's why we're saying expedite it and then put the others back in the queue. Number three, ensure North Star meets standards for pedestrian cyclist safety. The numerous safety challenges posed by Mulberry Knoll Extension and Beaver Dam Road have not been fully addressed. 4, adopt conditions on the application that protect adjacent properties and the natural environment. Reduce the adverse impact of North Star posed by lighting and insufficient buffers on Lewis Crossing. 5, insist that North Star meet the spirit as well as the letter of open space ordinances, which is not now the case. SPC agrees with the comments of the P&Z staff that the present design fragments open space. Contiguous open space requirements are not met. 6, rezoning for commercial area. Well, I'll skip that. And go on to the last slide. Considering the size, scope, and impact of this project, what we have heard today, and that that others who work and could not be here or call in, we respectfully request that the record be left open for 10 business days. And thank you for your consideration and your questions.
What's the purpose? Just to leave the record open just for the heck of it? We don't do that. What is the specific purpose we're leaving the record open for?
We have questions that we need to research regarding traffic, regarding the questions that I just asked today, and there were some things that I posed to the commission that I felt you should look into. And I could provide that list if you would like in writing.
We'll take that under advisement. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Hutt, if you would like to have the opportunity to respond to the questions that were posed, if you want to. We don't do that, sir. Your time's coming.
And this isn't an opportunity.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is not your opportunity to cross-examine anybody. This is us seeking information because we think it's relevant. So,
and keep it limited to the questions that were answered. Just, don't re-argue your whole entire presentation.
Hey, hush, everybody. You're going to get your chance to speak. I appreciate
your
patience.
Not that you're going to, but
long day. But we'll get to you. We'll get to you. We're going to let this guy answer a couple of questions from Ms. Hicks, if he wants to. Go ahead. He may not want to now.
I'm going to start with the question. There was a reference made to the letter that requested expedition of the application that referenced April filing for the low-income housing tax credit program. The Ingerman Group actually filed applications, and as I indicated at the beginning, the reason for expedition was because it's very difficult to qualify for those programs if you don't have the land use entitlements. And so have we missed that opportunity? I think that Mr. Holden can speak to that. But that is that's the reason for the expedition request. I don't know, Mr. Holden, if you want to add a little more color to that.
Just give us your name again. So we
David Holden.
Okay, go ahead.
We did submit in April. We mentioned earlier, it's a competitive, statewide competitive process. We scored really well, but we had a threshold issue because we didn't have land use approval. So they said, come back when you have land use approval. So that's our plan.
Okay.
Which, again, just underscores the need to get this expedited because they're stuck.
It's chicken or the egg. Yeah, I get it. Right.
So
I kind of asked you, but why the RPC versus?
Why not the RPC?
Why not the RPC, excuse me?
For many of the same reasons and the questions that you asked, and frankly, a lot of the concerns I don't think are any different if it's an RPC. As you know, I often have said this, I didn't say it today, but I have often said it, the zoning code's a toolbox of tools, and you know, you could be C4, you could be RPC, you could be this group of applications. The word that was on the screen was a holistic, you know, that if it was an RPC, it'd be a holistic review by the Planning Commission. I think having four applications in front of the Planning Commission at the same time is a holistic review of those applications. And for instance, there was a number of references to concerns about, for instance, people on the south side of Beaver Dam Road, crossing Beaver Dam Road to get to the amenity center. How does that change with an RPC? It's the same concern. And so that holistic view is the same, whether it's four applications, two applications, one RPC application. That's the answer to that question. I think there was a question about I thought Mr. Lardner addressed this during his presentation, a question about why BJ Lane doesn't have a 30-foot perimeter buffer. The code doesn't require a 30-foot perimeter buffer in all circumstances in a cluster subdivision. It talks about proximity to agricultural lands. It talks about proximity to another subdivision, to dwellings on another subdivision, but it doesn't require 30 feet everywhere. I agree, it's a matter of numbers. Along BJ Lane, it's 20 feet. That is what the plan and record shows. There's also a question about the forested buffer requirement that was referenced for the SCRP program. The SCRP program does not require a 50 or 100-foot forested buffer for a project. The SCRP program, and again, I thought this was covered, but maybe we didn't say it clearly, that 50 feet or 100 feet is a setback. It's not a buffer. It's a setback requirement, and if it is based on building height. And if you're 42 feet or below, your setback from the property line is 50 feet for the SCRP program. If the SCRP program, in addition to expediting and giving density, also gives a height relief to those units. And that relief is to go to 50 feet. If you go to 50 feet, then the setback becomes 100 feet. But it's not a forested buffer. It's a setback requirement.
Just going back to the BJ Lane question, just because I didn't go back through the record on it. But is that the same property where there's a letter of support for the application?
It is.
So that property owner, I suppose, has seen the plan and doesn't have an objection to the 20-foot?
And that is correct. If you read Mr. Jackson's letter,
it stood out as a letter in support, I'll be honest. So that's
when you scroll down the webpage, there was not a lot of those, yes, I would agree. But Mr. Jackson's letter indicates that the applicant's team met with him actually on multiple occasions. He has no objection to the project. There multiple options were given to him with respect to BJ Lane, as to how to handle that and how best to give him access. And so, right, he saw the plans and he has no objection to that. Um, I think there was a question about, I think about the impact of the conditional use affordable housing on property values. And frankly, we could ask Mr. Holden. He's done more affordable housing than probably anyone here. If there's any.
I don't remember a question. I thought it was just a statement. It wasn't a question. So we're not going to take any testimony. It wasn't a question.
Okay.
Just the lighting? Okay. Any other question?
It was about whether Mulberry and all that right away was counted towards the overall density. Because it's going to the state.
So all the land that is not tidal wetlands or water bodies was accounted for in the acreages that determine the densities for both the commercial and everything else, because it is all part of the gross acreage, and the code allows all that be included as a gross acreage. We would have netted out any tidal wetlands of the like. So yes, it was included in the various densities and values. Okay. Like we should have seen. Even when we do right-of-way dedications along the frontage road, that's still included as all part of the calculations.
Okay. That's the answer. All right. Thank you. You gentlemen, take a seat.
One question you did have that my friend Dotto going to have to answer is the traffic that's going to be assigned to Mulberry Knoll Road Extended.
Yeah, the vehicle.
Because I don't have that answer, but that was a question.
That's fine. Okay.
If you're going to talk, you have to.
Yeah, you need to come up here if you're going to.
Okay.
Thank you. Good. We appreciate that. Okay. You've all been so patient. It's wonderful. Who's next? We've got all night. Come on. Right up here. Absorb here.